Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. Today, I'm joined by Alex Stonehouse, who is the marketing director at Forge, in addition to a board advisor at the Startup Marketer. Alex, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited.
As am I. We were just talking about it before we went live, and this is probably one of the most detailed playbooks that I'm excited to break down with you. So Alex, before we dig into it, can you just kind of give us the high-level overview of what we'll be talking through today?
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to actually be talking about a company that I worked for a few years ago called Xometry. It's a SaaS tech company. What the company really did was it was in the 3D printing and CNC machining space. And if you're familiar at all with that space, the kind of old way of doing things was you would design something, you would send over your CAD file, your computer-aided design file. It would get seen by the companies that made these parts by a human. It would take them 1 to 2 days to get you back the price, get you back timing, get you back all those things. Our software basically did that whole process for you in 15 seconds instead of 2 days. Wow. Using machine learning. So it was really a very cool product, like first in the market. Our big challenge, honestly, was getting people to try it for the first time, because once we got them to do it once, they were like, oh my God, this is amazing. So that's sort of where what the company did. I joined there when it was about 50 or 60 employees in like deep single digit ARR, maybe getting close to low double digit revenue. And so we were pushing on that $10 million a year revenue range. And our goal while I was there was like, how do we get to 25? How do we get to 50? How do we get to 100 million? And the company actually ended up IPOing in 2021 on the NASDAQ. So got to those goals based on all this work we were doing early on. So it was a very cool time to be at that type of startup and to get growing there.
I love it. So what I'm hearing is that the ABM program we're about to talk through actually led to an IPO. So no pressure. Yeah. Clearly really cool product that was a first in the market. So once people actually like wrap their head around it, they're like, we have got to use this moving forward. So I'm curious, let's start with first audience. Like, how do we even determine who would be the best fit potential customers to go after?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And we started pretty heavily on SEO and paid search. So we had a fairly robust Google campaign. We were targeting both kind of enterprise engineers, people who are doing this for companies, but also the maker type people who maybe were designing something for Christmas for their wife or something, a little toy for their kid or something like that. So we were just trying to figure out who wants this, who's using it, who's been trying to just really identify it through some of those paid channels. And that worked really well when we were early on. Like, you can make couple million dollars here and there and that with that type of solution in that market. But then with our growth goals in mind, it came down to, well, how do we level up again? How do we continue to grow this? And on some of those channels, something like paid search, the very old mentality is from like 15 years ago was the more you spend and the more you grow, the cheaper it'll get because people will know your brand. And then when they see it, they'll click on it and you'll transition this paid media into organic media, and they'll start clicking on your high ranking organic links instead of your paid links. And by the time we were doing this in the late 2010s, like that really wasn't the case anymore. The more you scaled your paid media, the more expensive it just became. So like, if you tried to keep pushing and keep pushing on it, your CAC kept getting higher, things kept getting more expensive. So we really were at this point where we were like, all right, we're getting close to 10 million. We're at this 10 million number. How do we level up and continue to grow from a revenue standpoint? And the answer we really came to was centered around ABM. It was, we had hundreds of clients at that point where it was one person at least within a company was buying from us. So we had all these companies represented. But then in our head, we were thinking, all right, how do we get 20 people from this company to buy, 50 people from this company to buy? So it wasn't the classic kind of like B2B enterprise SaaS play where once you hook the company, you have them one time. It was, we had the ability to sell in multiple times to multiple people within the organization. So it was just crazy not to do an ABM approach at that point.
Yeah, and I just love the outline. There's a lot of people that are thinking about building an ABM program. They're like, how do we know that's the right fit? And it's like, as you really start to think through it, Do we have a really specific narrow focus of right fit accounts that would benefit from our products? Do we know exactly who our buyers are? If yes, it probably makes a lot of sense to build an ABM program.
And I would argue too that if you're trying to figure that out because you're pretty early stage, this can totally still apply. Like if you said, hey, these are the 50 companies we think are a good fit, we want to go after them. And then you learn over the course of 3 to 4 months, like, oh, we were wrong. They're not the right fit. Now you just give yourself a lot of trouble and a lot of money and a lot of hassle because now you know, all right, well, we were wrong on that. How do we either retool the product or retool our marketing approach? And so it's really valuable early on as well.
And that's one of those things that I think if people can wrap their head around the idea that ABM is an experiment, that's one of the current ways, most efficient ways to actually validate ICP and validate messaging. Yeah. And if you can stomach, we're going to invest in this as a validation. And once we can validate that these are the right people, we'll scale it up. I love that approach. Yeah. It's just a lot of people can't stomach that. And they're like, oh, we got to like make sure before we go all in on ABM. But anyway, that's a separate conversation for another day. So that said, that's how we determined who we wanted to go after. I'm curious, when you started to build out the programs, were there any specific indicators that made it super clear now's the right time for us to actually reach out?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we did a lot of work with, we did a lot of guides. So things that were more technical guides. We also had a really big video play at the time. So, I mean, obviously like YouTube and those things were around for, have been around for decade plus at this time, at this point, but we were really thinking about, all right, how do we do some of the things that like creator type people are doing or influencers are doing, but doing it on the B2B side or doing it on the business side. So we would do things like, we had a whole series, we called it the Will It series, which was, we would take 3D printed materials, 3D printed products and say like, will it break or will it burn? And we would literally film a video, start these things on fire or like drop a red hot crucible on them or do all these things that were just a little more fun. And then we'd have a technical expert come in and talk about it. And then we would layer that on with the actual like real technical guides on like why these things are true. So if it burned a hole in one, but not the other, it's like, all right, well, that's because the melting point is this on this one and this on the other one. And so we really were trying to apply like some fun and some things that would resonate with the engineers in our audience and counter that with the more technical aspects, which they also appreciate. So like going all in on the fun or all in on the technical was something that we just knew wasn't going to work. And we really had to balance it. And we were lucky to, though, that group of people, when you try to speak their language, and this is true of a lot of audiences or a lot of industries, like when they feel like you're not just trying to sell the product, which we were trying to increase revenue and all that, but we were also trying to understand what they were thinking, feeling, like what they think is funny, what they don't think is funny, and talk to them that way. We got so much positive feedback about like, even they'd say like, oh, your price is similar to this other product. Yours is a little bit faster, but we are like, we come to you when we're bored and we don't have anything to buy yet. And so it really was balancing, like finding those people when they're ready to buy, when they're in market, and then also when they're just being entertained. And we, to add on to that, we did split how we treated channels. So for example, people who came in through Google, that was like, they're raising their hand, they're ready to buy, they're looking for like cheapest 3D printed parts. We know they want to buy something in the next 2 days, they're ready to go. So we would treat them that way. And then people who like, we knew they were the right ICP, we knew they were engaging with our content, we'd treat them, nurture them a little more, treat them a little bit slower, get to know more people in the organization and take a little bit of a slower approach to them.
I think it's super smart to actually create different nurture programs and paths based on the ways in which they came to you. And I think, honestly, as I'm seeing a lot of people talk about like the idea of website re-engagement, it's like very specific to the content that was engaged with, but that's a whole other component that I don't hear a lot of people talk about is like, yes, website re-engagement, good playbook, but like, how'd they get to your website and then nuancing the program based on how they got there and what they engage with, not just what they engage with.
Yeah. We had a really amazing data scientist there who I've worked with a few times, Andrew McDowell. He's just a great guy, but he also really helped us as the marketing team spearhead some of this stuff. So we'd come to him and say like, hey, we have this hunch. Yeah. We think people are behaving differently in these different channels or these different areas. Can you help us prove it out? And he would go in and say like, yeah, you're totally right. Like the average person who comes through Google closes, either buys or doesn't buy in 3 days. The average person who comes in through LinkedIn takes 3 weeks. And so we were able to take that knowledge and go kind of apply it and treat them as such on the back end. So that's something he did helped us to do because he's amazing at it. So we did it really fast. you can get to that information through a HubSpot or Salesforce or other places too, or Google Analytics or however you want to, if you set things up right and you're making a conscious effort to go look at that stuff.
Very cool. So now we've got an understanding of how we found out the right people to target. We know why we're reaching out. I'm curious, what were then the best channels to actually engage these different audiences? So obviously you did a little bit through Google. You're using a lot of different channels, but I'm specifically curious, as you think about the unique channels for your ABM program, what were the best channels that performed?
Honestly, email was big. Email is one of those things where you can get people talking about how it's dead and it's never coming back. You can get people talking about how it's the one thing that delivers for them. We were very heavy on that. And what I'll say about that is we were also very strict about the quality of that list. So I think the default on in HubSpot is if somebody doesn't engage for like 14 emails or 16 emails or something, they become unengaged. Ours was like 5. So it was like, if you're not into what we're doing, we're not going to focus on you. And so by making sure that our list was always really fresh and always really up to speed, we were able to really hone in on who's engaging and why they're engaging. And that allowed us to then like iterate our messaging, iterate those things much faster. I think when you have a lot of kind of like fluff or like busy data in there, when you're looking at your email sends, you'll have two emails. One gets a 19% open rate and one gets 21%. And you can't really glean anything from that. But if you narrow the audience down a little bit and then you do your experimentation, then you do your different messaging and all that, I think it allows you to gain some insights and adapt in a way that you can't do when 2/3 of your database is dead or old or churned or whatever.
Yeah. Super helpful. So seems like because you... Which makes sense in the context of an ABM program. And I love we only focus on those that were actively engaging. So because you had an actively engaged audience, you could be a lot more specific and tailored and direct versus just like, let's serve the lowest common denominator.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we also then would take, we were really good about getting the most out of the content that we created. So like, let's say a video, for example, we'd obviously put it up on YouTube, put it on the website, put it in a blog post. Then send it out to our audience, new video release, promote it. But then we'd also use that as the content that we were doing in like sponsored posts or in custom e-blasts or things that we were paying to go do as well. So we were making sure that anything we were paying money for was matching what we were doing on the organic side. And so we were never saying like, hey, we're going to spend a week making this thing, making this video, making this content, and we're going to get 30 seconds out of it, or we're going to get a half a day pay out of it. It's like, if we're going to spend a week to make this, let's get a month of play out of it. Yeah. And as a marketer, sometimes you have to fight the urge to be like, I'm sick of this. So your mind goes, I'm sick of this. My audience must be sick of it. That's typically not true. Like if you're sick of it, it probably means you're just about hitting the right cadence of like people are starting to remember it and it's starting to resonate. Mm-hmm. So like if you're sick of it, give it 3 more weeks and then you can actually be sick of it and kill it. But like let it ride when you're starting to get sick of it for sure.
Man, I don't know about you, but I feel like whenever I get starting to get sick of something, I'm like, oh, this is like me knowing that anyone might even know it in the first place. It's like,
exactly, that's really what it is. It's like, because you're think it's your thing you're obsessed with, right? So like I think about this all day long. How's it resonating with someone who thinks about it for 45 seconds,
exactly,
or 15 seconds or whatever? Like they're gonna need more time. So
yeah,
absolutely.
Very cool. So we talked a good bit about email distribution specifically, and it sounds like as you were building out new content assets, you, really good friend Justin Simon, talks about distribution first as a concept, which is just as you build out your content strategy, also think about all the plans for how to distribute this information and this content. It sounds like you really did take more of that approach of not just let's make good content, but like thinking through what are all the channels we plan to actually distribute this information through. So outside of email, were there any other channels that were good performing channels for you guys?
We also had a lot of success on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is really great because I like to think about LinkedIn as the kind of the counter to Google. So what Google allows you to do is you don't know exactly who the person is, but you know what they're thinking about in theory, right? Like if you have your targeting right, you know what questions they're asking, you know why they're asking them to a certain extent, you know what they're in the market for. So you can't really hone in as much as I would like to on who exactly they are, but you know, based on if you get your targeting right, what they're doing, what they're thinking about, what they're worried about. LinkedIn is sort of the opposite, where it's, I know exactly who they are. I know where they work. I know how big their company is. I know basically everything about them from a demographic standpoint. The only thing I don't know is if like they have are in market to buy something right now, if they have a need in terms of buying, and if they have money to buy. And so like you're a little lighter on the buying signals there. And that's why we were running both of those things at the same time. It's like you kind of get the best of both worlds when you do both. But LinkedIn was a big one on that front. And that, especially when you think about it in an ABM context, it allows you to really hone in on those companies, right? So like you can focus on the industry, you can focus on people who work at certain companies, especially for bigger companies. Like we had people buy from us who were just individual people, like makers who were making stuff in their garage, but our real target audience, like the bulk of our revenue and the bulk of our customers were these big companies. So like we did work with NASA and SpaceX and Blue Origin and BMW and GE and all these companies. And so like, that's where we came in and we were like, all right, we need to take this ABM approach and use tools like LinkedIn where we can say like, all right, do you have an engineering title and do you work at one of these 50 companies that we care the most about? And so like that audience actually ended up being thousands of people. Like it wasn't hundreds of thousands. Like we weren't doing a mass play there, but it was enough to get some real traction and get some results through sites like LinkedIn.
Yeah. And again, I mean, as we think through it, deal sizes in B2B are fairly large. So like 1,000 buyers, if you convert at 10% and you close 100 deals.
Oh, absolutely.
ACV, like that's not an insignificant amount of money.
Yeah. That's when you really pull back, like a lot of companies who are trying to get to these numbers that we've all set as sort of the benchmarks or have been set by VCs or whoever as the benchmarks in that space of the 10 million, the 25 million, the 100 million. It's hard to, when you're like sitting at $8 million a year, it's hard to be like, how the hell are we going to get to 100? But the reality is like, what you really need to figure out is how to get to 15 or 20. Once you get to 20, you do it. Then you figure out how to get to 30. And if you can, you do it in a way where you're saying, the things I'm doing will get easier or more efficient as we do that, ideally not harder. And so that's something where just having good leadership and good strategists around you really helps, because sometimes in the very early stages, like if you're a 1-2-3 person marketing team, you're going to have to do some stuff that isn't going to scale and isn't efficient to get into the market, to get to know people, to understand how they're thinking. And then you can work on setting things up that scale a little bit later.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. You've touched a lot on content already. I'm curious, how did you help people go from the entertaining and educational content to purely like, it's time to buy our stuff? Like, what was that content delineation?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. We would typically send up anything that was a little more entertaining with direct links, either to talk to a rep, talk to somebody on our sales team, or to link directly out to something like those guides. So we would, if we were doing a video about CNC machine parts and how precise they can be and tolerances and all these kind of engineering specific things, we would do it in a way that was fun, in a way that was entertaining and visually appealing and engaging. But then we would link out to something like the CNC machining guide on how to like increase your tolerances. And so like, if you're just a marketing person like me, those were kind of dry, to be honest. But then inside there were these amazing visuals. They were explaining like how to become more efficient, how to build parts that are more stable, how to do these, basically solving the problems that engineers typically had in creating these custom parts. So we would pair the fun with the seriousness that way. But I mentioned handing them off to sales. That was a big part of it too. And so while we were sort of working from the top down of like, how do we reach as many people as we can within these companies, sales was working as what I would describe as the bottom up. And so they were saying like, we have one or two buyers in this company already. They were asking for introductions to two or three more. They were getting to know people on those people's teams. They were getting to know the buyer's boss or the buyer's best friend at the office or whatever. They were working it from a very personal standpoint while we were helping to spread information from the top down. And one thing we found there that was really interesting is at a lot of these companies, the way to get on people's radar isn't necessarily trying to reach like 50 people through an ad or like try to hit them all from the outside. it was getting a few people on the inside to really believe in you and become kind of evangelists. And then they would spread the information on the inside. So like we would send literal physical boxes of like our flyers and like why you should buy with us and with a little bit of swag in it, maybe just like a nice little package. And it would be something that they could put in the office or put in the break room or whatever. And so people could see it. And we would make enough so that if they wanted to hand out the flyers to their friends, they could. So we'd do a pack of 20 flyers in there or postcards that they could give out with a 10% discount code or whatever we wanted to use on it and do it that way. And then the one thing we, when we had a really good relationship with someone that we would ask for is we would ask if they could list us on like their Confluence page or like their internal page or their intranet page, whatever they, whatever yeah. term they had for it. And we would see like, when someone would do that, it would be crazy. We'd have like two or three buyers in a company, and then with they'd post us on their intranet, and then before you know it, we've got 40 people buying from this company 3 months later. Like it was, that was one of those things where like none of us, when we sat down at the beginning of the year, thought the internal intranets is going to be our play that's going to hook, like bring in a quarter of our business. And then once it happened one time, we were like, we were looking at the analytics in Google and we were like, what the hell is this intranet link here? Like we showed up as like the company's intranet and we were like, what the hell is that? And so we like reached out, asked him what the deal was. And he's like, yeah, I posted it, whatever. And then we were like, the light bulb went off. We were like, that's the move. Like once we have, once we feel comfortable and feel like we've earned the right to ask for that, that's something you can straight up go ask for and be like, hey, like we think we're doing really good work for you. We'd love to do this for everybody at the company. Yeah. And if you could do that for us, it'd be awesome. So most people do it. Like 80% of people will do it for you.
That is such a guerrilla marketing move that I've not heard anyone else talk about, but is like so smart because essentially it's an always on referral program.
Yeah.
Like to get internal referrals to other departments.
And then new people would join from another company and it like they'd go be trying to learn how things operate and they'd see us on their third day of work or whatever and ask about us. And like it really did help get us across departments and across specialties within these organizations. Especially you picture like someone like a BMW or a GE or those companies, they're like, they have all kinds of departments who they don't really work together, but then they all access the same software.
Also then mitigate the potential that you've only got a single threaded point of contact. So it's actually also probably a huge retention play to make sure you keep sticking around in these accounts. That's probably the, of everything we talked about, that's probably like the greatest takeaway for any large company that's like working with a lot of other organizations. That's a huge, great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really beneficial and they all appreciated it. It like, it actually took work kind of off their plate and then make them look like internal, like geniuses. Like people would be thanking them inside their own company. Like, oh, thank you for sharing this with me. Or like, oh, I've been like banging my head against the wall trying to figure out where I was going to order this stuff. Like, thank you. And so like they looked good to their colleagues. They looked good to their bosses. They looked good to everybody. And then it was doing us a solid too. It really was like a win for both sides.
That's awesome. All right. So last couple of quick questions. One, how did you measure success?
Yeah, so that's very important, obviously. So I think when you're setting up these type of campaigns, it's something you should obviously think about from the beginning because it's going to be something that you need to know if everything you're doing is working, but it's also something that the CEO is going to care about. The board, if you have a board, is going to care about. The leadership team is going to care about. So everybody involved is going to want to know, all right, you're spending all this time doing this thing. It's a, whether it's a full kind of GTM motion with UN sales, whether it's marketing led, there's different ways you can kind of operate and do it. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to like how much money is coming in the door, how many leads do we have, all these different things. So in this example, we were really looking honestly daily, which was probably unhealthy, but like weekly we'd have reports on like just total revenue, total orders. And then we actually split out revenue growth within ABM accounts and new buyers within ABM accounts. So we would, if you looked at our dashboard, we would basically have a number that was like total orders this month, total new customers, total new companies. And we would split companies and customers. So like, for example, if you had five people from one company, that would count as five customers, but one company. And so we track both numbers so that we could see like how many actual people are buying from us versus how many organizations are buying from us. And then within that, we looked at like, all right, who are we deploying this ABM approach to and how is it working for them? So we would say we could compare like for the companies who aren't getting the ABM special touch, who are just finding us on Google or whatever, we have X amount of orders from them. And for people who are really trying to get deep into those accounts, here's what we're doing from them and compare the two. And then one final thing is just CAC. So what did it cost to acquire all these people? And the one thing I'll say, obviously this is an ABM podcast, so I'm pro ABM and so are you. But it actually is a thing that really helps create efficiency when you're looking at your overall costs and things like CAC. Like it just, it's almost like a version of that, like whatever 20 or 30 year old thing of like, it costs more to acquire a new customer than it does to keep an old one. It's a similar thing where it's getting deeper into these accounts once you're already into them is just more efficient and more financially efficient than it is to just go find totally new companies. And so obviously I'm simplifying it to an extent. There's like, when you're in the moment, it can be like, oh, I thought I was going to have an interview with this guy, but actually he bailed on me. And it can still have the normal frustrations of selling and marketing and all that. But it really is a way where the main thing we reported onto our board was CAC. And so bringing our CAC down over time was really important for us. And so this was a big part of doing that, rather than just saying, like, we didn't want to dump money into Google forever and just keep adding money and becoming less efficient. It was, all right, we kind of hit that threshold there. And how can we add efficiency rather than kind of ruining our efficiency?
Yeah, I love it. So last two questions. One, as you were implementing this process in this program, like, were there any unexpected roadblocks that kind of popped up that you were like, oh, I did not anticipate that happening?
Yeah, so we mentioned the intranet idea, and I mentioned emails as well. We had a few clients who were very protective of the like time and focus of the other people within their organization. And so we had a few people who were like our main point of contact, who, when we would start trying to do like outreach, like do the multi-threading or reach out to other people in their organization, they would kind of be like, hey, like knock it off, or like, this is my thing, I'm going to be the point on this. And we're very like kind of serious and particular about that. And we tried to give them the benefit of the doubt on it and say, like, they're probably at an organization where they're overworked. They're maybe working 60, 70 hours a week. So like, let's respect that impulse to protect them. And so what we actually did to solve that, because we weren't going to just be like, cool, we're just going to let this account never grow and whatever. We were like, well, there has to be a solution for this, so let's figure it out.
Yep.
What we actually started doing was saying, like, totally get that, respect that. We'll like tamp down the amount of emails we're sending to you guys. But basically in exchange for not bothering you once a week over email, let's do like a once a quarter in-person training or like an event where we come visit your corporate office and do something for you. And they were so excited to do that because they were like, we can get everybody together for 2 hours on a Friday morning or whatever. Like, we're totally happy to dedicate time to this topic. What they didn't want was distraction. So they're like, we don't want you bothering us constantly, but we're happy to learn more from you, but we don't want to be bothered. So by doing that and just being like, hey, we're going to create a little presentation just for you, for your use case, for your organization, they were totally into it. And then we'd get 60 people sitting in a room, having some pizza or whatever, listening to what we had to say. So that was how we went around that. But that was definitely a moment where we were like, damn, this guy who we thought loved us seems like he hates us. But it was like just being protective of their time and their energy, I think.
But like, what a smart way to take an objection and like a potential damaged relationship and actually turn it into a very clear positive. Like, that's,
yeah,
that's super smart. And again, yes, like, it's going to take some resourcing. It's going to take some time. It's going to take some money. But if you can expand an account versus going to acquire a new account, the return on spend is going to be almost always more beneficial in customer expansion than net new acquisition.
Yeah, absolutely.
So last thing would just be any parting wisdom for somebody that's building their first ABM program.
So I would say definitely do it and figure out a way that it works for you. There's really a lot of benefits to it. I think I like to think about it as having both short-term and kind of long-term benefits. So there's all the financial things that we talked about already, like increasing your ARR, getting new clients, shorter deal cycles, faster time to close. There's all these benefits of an ABM approach. But what it really comes down to at the end of the day is doing the thing that is the reason that most of us got into this space, which is making connections with people, helping people understand there's a better way to do things, helping to solve the problems that your company solves, but making it clear, getting that story across, getting those relationships built. And I think a lot of times on the marketing side of things, some of the creative work can be a little bit like sexier, for lack of a better term. Like everybody loves a great ad, or everybody loves something that just like you get to like go and hide away for 3 days and create it and then go present it to people. But the thing that really moves the needle for the way a lot of companies are set up, whether in the tech space or not, is those personal connections and is getting to understand what people are saying, why they're saying it, and what they actually need. And so doing that with marketing and sales in conjunction in a real kind of integrated ABM approach can be really valuable. And it could be done at a 7-person company, and it could be done at a 700-person company. So there's a lot of flexibility in the kind of the mindset and the approach.
I love it. And couldn't agree more. Well, Alex, thank you so much for joining me today. If people want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
Yeah, find me on LinkedIn, Alex Stonehouse. That's the place to be. Occasionally you'll see some recordings like this on there. I like to post at least 4 or 5 times a week. So I'm pretty active on there, and you can definitely find me, find what I'm up to, find what I'm talking about on there.
I love it. Well, again, Alex, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you in the next one.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, we've got a ton of other episodes that dig into how you can build programs using your existing tech stack. Additionally, if you have specific questions that you'd like to ask, we host a weekly live stream on LinkedIn called the ABM AMA, where you can join and get your questions answered directly by experts. And lastly, if you're looking for practical templates, guides, frameworks, and playbooks, check out scrappyabm.com, where we're building a library of resources that help ABMers just like you get their programs off the ground. Again, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to seeing you in the next one.